Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Matot. This week, Rabbi Daniel Landes discusses Matot. Rabbi Daniel Landes is the director of the Pardes Institute. And now, Rabbi Daniel Landes.
Thank you very much. Today's parsha, this week's parsha, Matot, has a fascinating halachic section, legal section, right at the beginning, chapter 30, verse 2. Moshe spoke to the heads of the Matot, Roshe Matot, the heads of the tribes, children of Israel, and said, "This is a thing that God has commanded." And I think it says it that way because you wouldn't have necessarily come up with these conclusions on your own. This is what God commands, this one. And here's the verse that's going to become important. There's many important verses, but key verse is the first verse. Ish ki yador neder ladunoi o shavash vual asori sorrow nafsho lo yachel devaro kecho hayotze mipiv yaaseh. A person, if they vow a vow, yador neder, vow a vow to the Lord, or they oath an oath, yishavash vua, to forbid something on their soul, meaning to forbid something from themselves, lo yachel devaro. Translation, he shall not break his word, he should not, more literally, we'll come back to this phrase within this important verse, he should not secularize, profane would be a better word, he should not profane his word, meaning, kachal yotze mipiv yaaseh, should do exactly what he uttered. And we know that there are ways of getting out of it, but actually, biblically, it doesn't seem so. And actually, when the rabbis created, from a very close reading of the verses, a way out, they did so because, you know, these oaths and these vows can be tremendously onerous. You make a certain promise, and it becomes very onerous, and the Torah wants you to fulfill it. Rabbis don't want you to do it to begin with. You know, don't make any vows and don't make any oaths because it's really hard. But once you've done it, you got to fulfill it. But sometimes it's really hard to fulfill, or maybe even almost impossible to fulfill. So they needed to find a way, which you know about. Courts can reject or nullify the vow and call nidre. We all know about that. And Yom Kippur. In fact, I'll come back to it. But the major thing to begin with is to create a distinction between the two major categories. And that is neder, or plural nedarim, and shavuah, plural shavuot. And these are, the nedarim are the vows, neder vow, shavuah is oath, shavuot are oaths. And these are the two major ideas expressed in this section, and kol nidre and other forms of annulling these promises. These are really the two central ones. Others are derivative. So what is a shavua? What's an oath? A shavua is either an affirmation of a matter of a fact, or a commitment regarding an action, evoking a direct or indirect mention of the holy name of God. So you affirm something, or you commit to an action, you evoke some mention of God's holy name, directly or indirectly. And a shavua is really a very direct form of making this kind of oath. There are many forms of shavua. I'll just mention several forms. One is shavuat bitui, an oath of expression. It's an act, refers to some act done in the past, or some act that a person wants to do in the future. He has done it or not done it. One swears, for example, evoking the divine name. Then a certain day one has or has not eaten porridge, has thrown a rock, or has not thrown a rock, fasted or done one's homework, or that one will eat porridge, will not do any one of those things, or will do their homework at a stipulated time to come. And a person makes such an oath, and it turns out that the opposite is true, then this Shavuot Bitui is a Shavuot Sheker. This Shavua, this oath of expression, of affirmation, is an affirmation of Sheker. It's a lying oath. The second category is Shavuot Shav. It's a really a vain oath. There's three possibilities here. One swears that what is truthfully and commonly known to be true is in fact true. You swear by God's name that a stone in the backyard is indeed a stone. I must swear to you that that's a stone. Or one swears that one will void a mitzvah. I swear I'm not going to sit in any sukkah this holiday of Sukkot. Or one swears, and here's the third form, within this form of a vain oath, Shavuot Shav, that he will do something that's not in his power to do. I'm not going to sleep for three full 24 hours straight because I need to do this work. Purposely taking God's name in vain through any of these examples of a Shavuot Shav is punishable by flogging. Third form of Shavuot is Shavuot Pikadon. It's an oath of deposit. Here one swears that something of value that one has, as it were, on deposit from another person is not owed to that person. Someone deposits something with you. And then later on wants to pick it up, you say, no, you never gave me anything. Now, this object may have been deposited for safekeeping, as when I ask you to hold something for me temporarily. It may be given to you as a loan, because you've asked me to loan you money. In either case, denying the debt is outright theft. The fourth and last form is Shavuot Edut, oath of testimony, in which those in receipt of information regarding a monetary suit deny an oath they have testimony to offer. You're called as a witness. And you say, I know nothing about that business dealing. And that's a lie. You take that Shavuot and you take it as a lie. Such an oath, denying testimony, is really another, technically an interest of Shavuot Sheker, but it merits its own category. So that's the Shavuot. Let's talk a little bit about Neder. Neder is the vow. That was the Shavuot, that's the oath. And I should say now, and I'll say it at the end, I hope, if I remember, that I've written an article on this whole notion. It's called Choice, Commitment, Cancellation, Vows and Oaths in Jewish Law. Choice, Commitment, Cancellation, Vows and Oaths in Jewish Law. And it's within a wonderful book, All These Vows, edited by Rabbi Lawrence A. Hoffman. And Larry Hoffman has this series, which is the series of Prayers of Awe, which are articles on different prayers that are parts of the Days of Awe, and I'm part of this series, and I wrote this article. Larry Hoffman, let's go in and ask for Larry Hoffman's series on Kol Nidre and the rest and other parts of the service. It's an ongoing project, and while you're at it, you should really look at People's Prayer Book, which is 10 volumes, which is terrific. I'm also a contributor there, so I don't think, however, I'm giving any sort of false vow. So we've talked about oaths, and now we're talking about, or for that matter, a false oath. So we talked about oaths, and now we're going to talk about nedarim, neder, a vow, vows. A vow is a personal decision, a vow, neder, halachically, not to do something or not to derive benefit from someone. That's how it's practically. In temple times, there were some other considerations, but I want to deal with the contemporary reality of neder. A neder is a negative declaration to forbid oneself from something that otherwise may have been permitted. And that's really what that verse we just saw in the beginning of our parsha. Ish ki yador neder la Hashem v'shavashvel asor yisor al nafsho. To forbid something. You're forbidding something on your very soul. If you didn't forbid it, would be permitted. What's an example? You take a neder not to eat certain fruit from a certain fruit stand that you might patronize. But no, I'm not going to eat from there. And you make a neder. Now, the neder technically differs from the positively articulated Shavuot in that the neder, this negative articulation, does not invoke God's name. All one needs to do in order to make a neder is declare that a particular item or practice is asur to oneself. And therefore, the verse that we quoted, Numbers 33, in the Midbar 33, in the beginning of Matzot, Lo Yachel Devaro. He continues to say, not that he should not break his word, or more literally, and I like it, he should not profane his word. He should not let his word become profane. This is sacred when you decide to forbid something. Now, a neder is most commonly used to ensure a religious discipline. Here's a good example. A person takes a neder to refrain from sitting during the chanting of the Torah out of respect for the Torah chanting. Now, you can sit during the chanting of the Torah, but a person on their own says, no, no, I forbid, I won't be on that seat. That seat are all places, all chairs, all benches, not for me. Such a practice, it has to be articulated. If it's articulated verbally, and not just articulated as words to yourself, but articulated verbally as a neder, or not even that, even if you just act that way for a period of time, it becomes a vow that needs to be continued. The strength of this neder has been explained by Rav Kook in his Pinkas. Rav Kook, the great thinker, 1865, 1935, born in Latvia, educated in Lithuania, serving in a Lithuanian community, and then coming to Israel and eventually becoming chief rabbi. Great, great man. The neder, this is my translation, represents vow. The neder, the vow. Try that again. The neder, the vow, represents the depth of natural revelation of the faith instinct that manifests itself in thought, in expression, and in action. One should not profane one's word. One should do according to all that leaves one mouth, we said in Numbers 30, verse 3. The neder is the boundary line that protects an individual's personal belief from being overwhelmed by the flow of the great light of codified obligation given from on high, from the mouth of the Supreme God, the universal inheritance to the entire congregation of Jacob. That's a mouthful. Let me explain. Rav Kook posits two orders to the moral spiritual life. The first is the Torah order of the moral spiritual life. Torah is divine, it's compelling, it's imposed upon us from without, even while it elevates us. But there's a second one, which is self-legislation, natural morality, a natural revelation, he calls it, in quotation marks, that we obtain from within ourselves as we seek through a sense of personal inner obligation to advance to an even higher ethical spiritual level. This is where neder fits in. It's purely personal, an added obligation that goes beyond the formal codified requirements of Torah, that is given its own elevated status by that very codified halacha that it surpasses. Halacha in general is universal to entire Jewish people. The neder, however, is specific. It's custom tailored by the individual for one's own ethical, spiritual needs. I want to rise higher. I want to rise higher than even the Torah obligation. I take upon myself this neder, refraining from such and such behaviors. And that way I can elevate myself. It's validated and given full and worth by halacha, the Torah source, alongside divine revelation itself, it becomes obligatory. So for Rav Kook, the neder is a source of moral, spiritual strengthening, beyond, as it were, the letter of the law. By extension, so too is the Shvua. Both signify higher human commitment, and as such, it must not be renounced, or can only be renounced very difficultly. There is, however, an intrinsic difference between a neder and a Shvua. It has implications for what we do on the high holidays of Hatarat Nedarim Ushvuot, the releasing of vows and oaths, as found in the Kol Nidrei service as the great example. Here is something which is fascinating, counterintuitive. You couldn't make this up. According to classical halacha, one can actually make a neder, a vow, okay, forbidding certain ritual requirements. Can't get better than Maimonides. Let me call it Maimonides, the laws of vows. If a person says, eating matzah on Pesach, sitting in the sukkah on Sukkot, or putting on tefillin is forbidden to him, then they are forbidden to him. If such a person nonetheless ate matzah on Pesach, sat in the sukkah during Sukkot, or put out tefillin in the morning, He is flogged for breaking his netter. Rambam, Maimonides. This ruling is not puzzling enough. Maimonides simultaneously rules in the laws of the oaths that if you attempt to cancel one's performance of the mitzvah in Shavuot, taking an oath, the oath has no effect. So we have a double problem. Can a netter really cancel a mitzvah? And if it can, why is that same effect not extended to a shvuah? The shvuah and netter are obviously different, but how? So listen to me carefully. I think this is the way it goes. Spend time on this. The difference lies in the fact that the object of the shvuah, is the person making the oath. Technically, one makes a shvuah, an oath, about oneself, not about the object or mitzvah to which one relates. By contrast, the force of a netter does not fall on the subject making the netter, but on the object or other person forbidden. So a general rule of thumb comes into play. In the case of a shvuah, one is always constrained by prior oaths they have made. Thus, if one has already committed oneself to even a neutral action by an earlier oath, I will wear a green shirt on the first Thursday every month. One cannot cancel this action through a second oath by saying, I will not wear a green oath on the first Thursday of every month, because you've already committed yourself to the first oath. One has already committed oneself to the first oath. So therefore, this new oath that I will not wear a green shirt is a shvuot shav. It's a oath in vain. We talked about oath in vain doesn't work. It cannot take effect. It's meaningless. It's vain. Shav. The implication for mitzvot in general is that in the case of mitzvah, we already have a prior oath. Every Jew is omed, mushba v'omed mehar Sinai. You're already obligated by the oath that you took at the Mount Sinai, in which you say, we will do the mitzvot, not seven shema. We will do the mitzvot, and we will understand mitzvot. One cannot extricate oneself from that commitment. One cannot, therefore, make a shavua that extricates oneself from halachic responsibility to fulfill a mitzvah. And this is so, therefore, on two grounds. Because there's a prior obligation going back to Sinai, obligating the person of mitzvah, and all Jews made that obligation at Sinai. We were all there. And second, as we said before, because the prior obligation falls on the person, not on the object of relationship. Because the shvuah, as we saw, not on the sukkah, or not on the matzah, but on your personal obligation. Because the shvuah, as we saw, falls on the subject, not on the objects the shvuah affects. Well, if that's the case, why then can a person make a netter, obviating a mitzvah, canceling a mitzvah? I mean, it should work both ways. The answer is not, now think for a moment. Is that the person who is obligated to sign it, it's the person who's obligated to sign it, not the object of halacha, not the matzah, not the object, not the matzah, not the sukkah, not the tefillin to which the person relates. A netter falls on the object, as we've seen, not the person. So therefore, and I'm going back to Maimonides, if one forbids, I'm quoting him, a matter, an object, such as matzah, sukkah, tefillin, through a netter, through the vow, it is the matter that is forbidden. And the matter is not part of the principle of being obligated by oath from the moment of standing at Har Sinai from Mount Sinai. Halacha distinguishes between the subject making an oath, that's the shvua, and the object, it distinguishes between that and the object to which the vow, the netter, is relevant. The object, as it were, is already at a distance existentially from oneself. A netter is the halachic means by which one may choose to alienate the object even further. This is important for contemporary Jews. You might think this, oh, where is this? This is really important. Distinction is obviously relevant to how contemporary Jews approach the acceptance or rejection of mitzvot. See, usually we think there's a choice. If one has embraced Kantian ethics, then one will assume that the only true ethical position is that which is derived independently from one's own developed ethical reasoning and understanding, not from any outside compulsion. By contrast, we think this is the choices, the religious Jew might argue that ethics derive not from ourselves, but from an external source, from God through the Torah. Both positions tend towards an all or nothing. ethics are either entirely self-legislating, as Kant would have it, or and liberality in general, or altogether received from God. In other words, that would be the Torah position, generally the traditional position. But if you look deeply within the halacha, we see something interesting here. The halacha of neder and shavuot may take some moderating position. Yes, obligations come from God. Yes, but individual understanding is not altogether relevant. The actual objects to which we relate through halacha are just that, objects. And so may very well be alienated from an individual, and you can alienate that verbally through the neder. Thus, while the halacha does not want an individual to make a neder that declares matzah, sukkah, tefillin forbidden, for it would be an awful thing to do for most traditional Jews, it nonetheless, even though it doesn't want a Jew to do that, it respects the integrity of such a declaration once it has been made. And it says, you better live by what you've said. But halacha refuses to allow an individual to remove the prior oath, a shavua made at Sinai by him through his ancestors. Halacha is anguished by and deeply regrets the distancing of an aspect of divine command from the individual, but understands and even validates it through the neder. It will not, however, countenance the distancing and canceling of the self from such a command, from the one who commands, and from the community within which the command is heard and preserved. Halacha's valuing of human and subsequent decision-making is real and deep. It permits a wide range of commitments or statements of alienation, even when it comes to mitzvot, and then one must keep to those commitments. Once legislated, even self-legislated, as the neder, it is law. But what if the vow or the future-oriented shavua is onerous and disastrous, like in the case that we talked about of saying that I won't say, you know, the sukkah is forbidden to me, matzah is forbidden to me. What if the person's imposed spiritual discipline turns out to be something that no longer can be kept, or that is disastrous theologically to be kept? You can keep it physically, but psychologically, one cannot bear being removed from Jewish practice. And this is where, in the Rosh Hashanah, in groups of threes before the Rosh Hashanah service, usually the morning before Rosh Hashanah, we form kind of a court in which these vows can be nullified, and thus we do that communally in Kol Nidre. Even though this way has no real status in the written Torah, it has a tradition associated with the oral law. It's actually a close reading of this line that I keep on coming back to, Lo Yachel Devaro, which very strictly translated means the one who made the vow cannot make it chol, profane. He cannot make it no longer obligatory. The one who made the vow can't cancel it on his own. But someone else can. And that's why the court has that possibility. That someone else is a Torah authority, or in his absence, a small baked in small court, or three ordinary people who are alert and generally knowledgeable. And this release occurs on the eve of Rosh Hashanah. Additionally, it's done communally with Kol Nidre. They reflect this process of releasing vows and oaths, Hatarat Nedarim and Shvuot, Uchvuot. As Rav Kook states, the beginning of forgiveness commences with the forgiving of the blemished vows. And that's our custom. We take what we say very seriously. We can never, according to the tradition, cancel our personal obligation, but we respect the cancellation through neder of something that is an object alienated from us. But even though we don't want that to happen, we respect it. But nonetheless, we find a way out. And the way out is the releasing of vows and oaths, the process that we have through the little courts and through Kol Nidre. Let's do the right thing. We don't need any vows. We don't need any oaths. Wonderful learning with you. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Landes. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.